Hello there, and welcome to the INFJ Journey podcast. I am Ariane Kvediax, an INFJ art writer, podcaster, storyteller, and founder of the INFJJourney.com. No one is you, and that is your power. This could be a pretty good way of getting the gist of the INFJ's life experience. Yet our journey is no walk in the park. It is one of unique challenges and hard-to-get rewards. One of deep solitude and constant battle to find a way, our way, to turn our unique gifts and our vision into reality. But you are not alone in this world. There are others just like you. On this podcast channel, we discuss all things INFJ. This is our place, where we can be what we truly are, share our thoughts, our questions, our dreams, our insights, our epiphanies, our challenges, and our vision. This is our journey too, where you are seen, heard, and understood as well. There's never been a better time than now to share our stories with the rest of the world. So go ahead and join us on a journey of discovery and endless imagination. The least I can do is to speak out for those who cannot speak for themselves. Dr. Jen Goodall. Hello, hello, my dear fellow INFJs of the world. I'm very happy to be back this week for the episode number 2 of season number 2, which is called Are You an Animal Whisperer? And obviously today we are going to talk in great length about animals, about the relationship that we humans have with animals, and what kind of relationship are we capable of having if we were to change the way we behave with animals. And we're going to start with something that is quite obvious, but sometimes we need to talk about what is obvious, just to get it out of the way and start with something maybe a little bit different. And obviously, we live in a society that is used to dismiss emotions. And as INFJs, we know that, because we are very much about emotions, even though as INFJs, the older we get, the better we become at handling these emotions, at using them in a productive way, in a healthy way for us first, and for people around us second. But in any event, if there is something that society is afraid, it's emotions. Because emotions, to many of us, are not a reliable source of knowledge. And without knowledge, how on earth would humans communicate? How on earth would communication be possible if we don't have something that we can analyze, rely on, and share with others? That's the theory of the thing. But what about the reality of it? Because obviously language is not the only way of communicating, especially with animals. And we know, most of us know, that we can communicate with different channels than the one we use with language. But it's one thing to know that, and it's another thing to do that, to start investigating this other channel, which is not the one we use with articulated language, with words. And it is how animals have been communicating with each other since the dawn of time, and we know that too. But funny enough, we know that, but we still trying to apply our method, our approach of communication, and force it on animals as if animals were lesser beings. And when I say that, I'm fully aware that for some of us, human beings, we still consider animals as lesser beings. And part of this attitude comes from the Bible. And the Bible in Genesis said to the humans, God said to the humans, that we have, in a way, a superiority on animals, and we have the stewardship of the earth and everything that lives in the earth. And because of that, and because of our Christian culture, for most of us anyway, we have considered over the years, over the centuries, that animals are lesser beings. And the proof of that, between brackets, of course, the proof of that is that animals don't have a proper language. And when we say that, we think a language with words, with grammar, with rules that we can apply and articulate that language with our voice, with our vocal cords. And since animals don't have that, they are lesser beings. And since we think or have been thinking for a long time that animals are lesser beings, then we don't really bother with communication with animals. We just apply our language to them, and we want them to adapt to this language. We want them to modify their way of being and to modify their own intelligence, because animals are intelligent as well. And everything that we do can and have worked to a certain extent, but we are also, if we are completely honest, that we are also fully aware that language, human language with animals, has its limits. It can work, and beyond a certain limit, it won't, because the more abstract, the more intricate, the more complex our thought, the more complex the language will become. And from that point on, animals won't be able to follow. But that's, again, the theory of it, because we can have very fulfilling exchange with animals. We can have a very deep kind of communication with animals, provided that we use the proper channels and we use the proper approach. And this approach is not our language. This is what I think, and maybe some of you will disagree with me, and that's okay. But I wanted to draw your attention on something that we take for granted, that our language is the universal means of communication, included with animals. And that, I think that's not the case. And even for those of us who like animals very much, but still think that words are the best option when it comes to communication, I think it's not. And I suspect that language and knowledge have been used by humans as an excuse, sort of excuse to avoid dealing with what we don't really understand and what just overwhelms us. And what is more overwhelming than emotions, less predictable, less controllable? And finding out I was an INFJ, to me, was I already said that, but it was a huge relief. Finally, I could let go of anxiety, of shame, fear even. I wasn't insane. I was just different, basically. And granted, many of us, if not all of us, are weird people. We are weird. We are obsessive. We are quirky. We are confusing even. And we are people who absorb both the joys and the pains, the pain of the world around us, especially for those of us who are empath as well, which is my case, and I suspect this is the case of many of you too. And maybe for some of you who are empath, maybe you are not aware that you are an empath. And if you suspect that you are, maybe you should check it out on the internet and see if you check the boxes. But I suspect that many of us are empath to some degree anyway. And simply put, I discovered I was an INFJ. I was an empath. I suspected that all along when it comes to being an empath. But I was, and empaths are emotional sponges, and we absorb absolutely everything, the good and the bad, and everything in between. And to many humans, it's a drag. We are doomed in a way to be like that, but because we are never in peace. And it's true, as long as we are not able to handle it. But if we learn how to be a healthy empath, then it's okay. But to many of us who are not either INFJs or empath, it's a drag. But it is to me, it's precisely what gave me an edge with animals. And I realized that as empath, it's and as INFJs too, we could communicate not only without words, but without any sort of apprehensions, because basically when you talk to an animal, the animal doesn't care how you look like, how you make a year. He doesn't bother to check if you are good enough, intelligent enough, gifted enough. The animals don't care about that. And as an empath and as an INFJ, I had an age, and you have an age, to communicate with animals. Because as INFJs, we're naturally connected to the big source, to everything, which includes this spiritual world. And our energy is different. We oftentimes, it's not a rule, but oftentimes INFJs and empaths have a lower energy level, which doesn't mean that we don't have energy, but our energy is, how should I put it, maybe distributed differently, scattered throughout our own INFJ spectrum, so to speak. And our energy is maybe more attuned to listening than it is to doing. And because of that, we are naturally gifted with animals. And I'm sure that many of us have already realized that, just because when you are in a room and there is an animal and the animal comes to you and you haven't called that animal, you haven't done anything, but the animal is drawn to you because it feels that your energy is good and it feels that you are a connected being. And that's what animals are after. And we, as humans, that's what we are after as well. Only we don't know that most of the time. And to most human, as INFJs, we are likely to be viewed as off balance, as too emotional, in short, sort of incommunicado. And intuitive communication is nothing new. It's just that our society has forgotten about it, partly because humans believe they're superiors to animals and that communication must be a language. And along with the question of language, there's the question of consciousness. That's the big debate, because among humans, there are those who think that animals are sentient beings, and as such, they have the right to be respected, to live their life freely and without fear. And there are other people who think that animals don't have a real conscience. And because of that, they don't have a language. And because of that, they don't really deserve our consideration, and that we have the right, the moral right, to treat them the way we want. And the debate about animals having a conscience or animal not having a conscience is a very, very old debate. And for the longest time, we humans have posited that animals don't have one. And it made things so easy for us humans to treat animals the way we want and to skip the effort of trying to find a new way of communication with animals. And animals lovers believe that it's the case. Animals are sentient beings. And I don't know about you, my dear fellow INFJs of the world, but I can't recall how many times I had communication issues with people because of language. I'll give you a practical example. I talked to someone I don't know, I never met before. This person may or may not be an INFJ, but I suspect with an INFJ it would be easier. But let's say this person is not an INFJ and I never met her before. And I tried to explain something, and after a while, we maybe both of us are going to discover that we don't put the same meaning in the same words. Awkward. And because of that, we humans may have a lot of communication issues. And it goes to making my point, which is language can be very confusing. And what would be the alternative to language, which would be universal, which would not be that confusing, and which would not require any kind of explaining to do, just to get on the same wavelength? And I believe that the answer is energy, because energy never lies. Energy doesn't have any agenda. And energy is only concerned with one thing, and this thing is being around, whatever the form it takes. Therefore, I think that energy is much more reliable as a form of communication between sentient beings. But we have to have language, because without language, it would be difficult. But we shouldn't be dismissive about energy, because as I said, energy never lies. And the simple truth is that most humans, including some of us INFJs, suffer from some kind of separation sickness. Sorry. Some kind of anxiety related to separation. We crave connections to the living world. We crave connection to sentient beings at a soul level. Sorry about that. And I suspect that many, many of us are not aware of that. It is not easy to be aware of our needs, because oftentimes we think that our needs proceed from our thoughts. But I don't think so. I think that some basic needs, and when I say basic, it's not something that is derogatory. On the contrary, some of our basic needs comes from our very body, our very our flesh, so to speak, our what constitute our being, our, how should I put it? It's not something that is intellectual. It's something that is purely physical. And we crave connections. Only many of us are not aware that we crave that. For INFJs, it's easier, because we are naturally connected creatures, beings, if you will. And it's not that complicated to realize that we need connections, and as INFJs, we're having some. But many human beings are not aware of that. They're only suffering from the need which is not fulfilled, from the craving which is not fulfilled, which is not met. But we are not aware enough of this need, and therefore we suffer. And when we realize that we have this need, then we go about to meet this need with language. And it can work to some extent and with some people. But a deeper connection, one that goes on a soul level, on a spiritual level, which is not religious, it's spirituals, not the same thing. And that kind of connection has to be met, has to be fulfilled, because it's one of the most important needs among beings, especially sentient beings. And this is precisely what many animals can give us. People who can talk to animals without a language are not so different from most of us. They just don't believe that animals are lesser beings. They pay attention to the living and have a conversation with animals through energy. And it is precisely what we do as INFJs. At least many of us do that. Are INFJs natural animal whisperers? Obviously, this is a question I can't answer for every one of us. But as INFJs, we are oftentimes empaths, and that makes communicating with animals rather easy. Animals have empathy, and this is a discovery that some humans who don't think that animals are equal to humans have made recently. But animals do have empathy. They can feel when another being is in pain, or upset, or desperate, etc. And the connection they can make with some of us runs at a deeper level than the one we can have with a proper language, an articulated language, vocal language. And in fact, having a language can jam our broadcast, and words make noise and prevent many of us from listening to others. And at that point, I think it's a good time that I explain what I'm referring to when I talk about being an animal whisperer. An animal whisperer is someone who can read animals' body language and who is able to understand the psychology of the species. It's different from animal communications, from people who are animal communicators. Animal communication goes through the senses, and it's solely based on intuition. Of love for all beings is the key word when it comes to animal communication. Oftentimes, we replace the words animal communication with the word telepathy. And I don't know if it is exactly the same. I suspect it's very close. But there's a distinguo to make between animal whisperer and animal communicator. And it's not a distinction of quality. It's just a distinction of approach to animal communication, to being able to communicate with animals. But to some degree, the distinction between the two concepts, reading animals' behavior and connecting to animals with the so-called love frequency, can be a tad misleading. Because we are all animals, basically. Some are more evolved than others, but still, we all are. And we all have our sixth sense, which is intuition, instinct, if you will. And we are all capable of love, which is used in animal communication. And I think that most INFJs are not animal lovers. We care for animals, we respect them, and we connect to their soul, to their souls. And I'm not sure that INFJs, especially the one who are also empaths, need to use telepathy to communicate with animals the way animal communicators do. To me, the key word is empathy and a great deal of attention. Because if you have empathy, enough anyway, and if you pay attention to the being in front of you, then you have everything it takes to communicate with an animal. If you have the gift of telepathy with animals, it's even better, but it's possible to have a meaningful communication with animals through empathy and through attention. And we all know that animals don't lie, and energy neither. Especially if you do the experience, you go to an animal shelter. Let's say you want to adopt a dog, and you go to an animal shelter, and you see a lot of dogs all desperate to get an owner to have a good life. And maybe you are fixated on a particular dog breed and an average age, and maybe you want a female better than you want a male, etc., etc. And you have that thought that the dogs you want should be like this and like that. And with these thoughts and these ideas that you have in your head, you project some sort of energy before you even enter the animal shelter. And when you are in front of the dogs or the cats, then your energy is going to be misleading. Then your ideas and your thoughts, your brains are going to be a little bit confusing, misleading, because they are going to jam your energy as a human being. And therefore, you may choose the wrong pet to have. But if you get rid of all that is intellectual and proceed only with your energy, then you're going to have proper encounters with animals. And then you are going to have more opportunity to choose the right pet for you, the pet which is going to match your energy, the pet which is going to be on the same level of energy that you are. And it's very important, because if you take a pet which is not, it's going to be a catastrophe. And the pet is going to be back to the shelter, and you're going to feel guilty about it. That's not a good thing. So trust your energy. Never lies. And animals never lies. And never lie. But the funny thing is that we spend so much time figuring out what people mean with the language they use. And even if you get advice from, back to my shelter example, even if you get good advice from someone in the shelter, eventually this person is not you, and this person is not your energy. And perhaps the problem in our relationship with animals is that we try to talk to animals, but we don't truly listen to them, because we take for granted that they don't have anything to say. So we just talk. We talk and talk, but do we listen? I'm not sure that we do. And a couple of years ago, I had a wonderful dog whose name was Chagall, like the Russian painter, because it was a multicolored dog, and it was a bloomer, which is multicolored, a Shetland sheep dog, a herding dog. And the weird thing, I was crazy about my dog. I love him to bits until he passed away at the age of 15. But the weird thing about my dog was that he happened to be a ninny, an introvert, if you will. And yes, you heard me correctly. My dog was an ninny. Only took me some time to realize it, because I took for granted that having that kind of personality is something that only humans can have. But I found out that my dog was an ninny. And there's a saying that from the famous dog whisperer, Cesar Millan. I suppose that many of you already know him. He has a YouTube channel, and he has a prosperous business about dog education, dog psychology. And the saying goes like that: we never get the dog we want, but the dog we need. And I discovered that saying years after I got my dog, Chagall. And it's so true, because in my case, when I got my dog, I thought that I absolutely needed a clever dog. I had this stupid idea that I needed to teach some tricks to my dog, and have very clever conversations with my dog. And I had that idea that Chagall, my dog, was the one who needed to understand me. How dumb was I? And so I did try to communicate with him, with words, with gestures, like many of us do with their pet, with their dog. But my beautiful Shetland sheepdog wasn't interested in all that. And I was very disappointed on my dog, because I thought, wow, my dog is stupid. But he wasn't. He was different. I was the stupid one. Given my dog's breed, a Shetland sheepdog, a herding dog, I was expecting a highly energetic dog, a rambunctious one, and always on the lookout for new adventures. And it's so embarrassing to say that, but I was so dumb. First, because I believed that I had to have a clever dog. Second, because I believed that my dog needed that my dog needed to have me talking to him instead of me listening to him. And because I believe that because he wasn't energetic and rambunctious, therefore he wasn't the proper dog. But he was the perfect dog for me, because he had the same energy level that I have, which is low. And he was some kind of contemplative dog, if there's such a thing for dogs. He was silent. He wasn't barking all the time like many herding dogs do. He was barking only when someone rang at the door. He hated that noise. So he was barking only in that case. And otherwise, he was silent, completely silent. And he was looking at me all the time, and he was very contemplative and private. Can you imagine a private dog? I had one. And as an innie, my dog Chagall was a loner. He needed his alone time, and I needed mine. And as I said before, he hated noises. He was very, very sensitive to that. He couldn't bear noises. And he was withdrawn, in a way, quiet, wary of strangers, especially the ones wearing hoodies, which he hated, by the way. And I always knew animals were sentient beings, and everything vibrates and emits a frequency. I knew energy is the real universal language, but still I was dumb. I was... Basically, what I was doing was trying to apply human patterns and ideas to a dog. And it was because of language. Because language equals thoughts, language equals concept. And all that luggage, I was trying to force it on my dog. And it didn't work. Of course it didn't work. Because... How do we connect when we really connect? We connect with love. We connect with care. We connect with empathy. We connect with attention to beings around us. And if we are not able, for any reason, to speak, then we can still rely on all these. We can still rely on our way of sharing our energy around us. And as INFJs, my dear INFJs, you know, I know, we know that we are very good at reading people. As empath, we also have a highly developed intuition, but sometimes we don't feel like we should trust it, that we shouldn't be trusting our guts. Why? Because it's raw material most of the time. And raw material is very often dismissed, discarded, because it's raw, because it is not abstract, because it is not intellectual. And this is misleading. And we are aware that there is a language without words, from spirit to spirit. So why don't we use it more often? Why didn't I? And maybe in my case, it was because I didn't trust myself enough. Not only my guts, but myself. Yes, you heard me correctly. For years, especially the years before I got to know that I was an INFJ, but even after, it happens, it still happens sometimes that I don't trust my guts. I trust my brain. And every time I did that, I was wrong. And every time I did that, something bad happened to me. Because my guts has no agenda and doesn't care whether I like what it says to me or not. It's just there. And if I am smart enough to rely on my guts, then I'll manage. And if I'm not, then I'm in trouble, basically in trouble. And there's someone I like very much. It's a woman. I think she's French. And her name is Laila Del Monte. And she has a YouTube channel, by the way. And Laila Del Monte is an animal communicator. And she explained that she is communicating with an animal. When she is communicating with an animal, information arrives at her mind through images, through thoughts, and through sensations. And she's an amazing person. She's very, very compassionate and dedicated to her mission, which is helping humans better understand animals to improve the conditions of animals on our planet. And Laila explained that she relies on intuition and empathy to connect with animals. And in my case, compared to Laila, I was afraid of connecting to my dog intuitively. I think I was afraid to be overwhelmed by my dog's emotions, to find out that maybe I wasn't a good dog owner. I don't know. I suspect that I was a bit afraid of what I would find if I were to communicate like that. And oftentimes, images, in fact, this is something I'd like to have your feedback on, my dear fellow INFJs. As an INFJ as an art writer, I rely a lot on my intuition to create content, especially on and from images. And oftentimes, images become some sort of foresight for me. I use them to get inside what I see. And it's intuition talking mostly. And I also rely on knowledge, obviously. So my question to you is, how do you proceed with when you want to establish a connection with a being, animal or human? What do you trust most, your brain or your guts? I'd be interested in your answer. It's a subject that keeps coming and coming when it comes to INFJs. Should we completely rely on our guts and exclude our brains, or completely on our brain and exclude our guts, or having both of them? It's a blend. It's a complicated balance to find. But in my case, guts are better. But I don't know. Maybe if you think that guts are misleading, just tell me on my website. Leave a comment on www.infjjourney.com. And even for us INFJs, it can be challenging to decide what we're going to rely upon, knowledge or intuition. And this makes me think of a quote from a French anthropologist, which is called Pascal Pic. And this guy once said, "Man is not the only animal that can think, but he is the only one who thinks he's not an animal." And I believe this is so true, funny and true. And back to my dog, Chagall. I noticed that our relationship greatly improved the day I stopped talking to him and started listening to what he had to say to me, how he felt, what he needed, what he wanted, etc. And I still don't know for sure if we have to draw a line between people who are animal whisperers and people who define themselves as animal communicators. Basically, they both reach out to animals. They both care. They both have the animal's best interest in their mind, and they pay a great deal of attention to animals. They look, they listen, they feel, and they respect the life in front of their eyes. And perhaps the outcomes of their works are different. Solving behavior problems for the animal whisperers and save animals from euthanasia or slaughter and fight speciesism for the animal communicators. The outcomes are different, but the approach maybe too, but basically the big idea behind the two approaches is the same. Giving animal what they want, respect them, and have a proper relationship with them. And I'm fascinated with intuitive communication because it's a way of connecting to all sentient beings. And again, it is what we do as INFJs. And to me, I think that the perfect illustration of what we are as INFJs is not something that we should set aside. It's on the contrary, this kind of communication is based, the intuitive communication is based on the theory of quantic entanglement. And the theories of quantic entanglement says that consciousness of all living beings is connected. And the key to communicating between species and from human to humans to humans might not always be our language, but our energy supercharged with genuine empathy. And I think this is so right, thinking that consciousness of all living beings is connected. We are separated from nothing. And the only thing that might separate us from other sentient beings is precisely what we think is the best thing to go about when it comes to communication, which is language. No, it's not. I don't think that it is. And obviously, whisperings to animals can be done in so many different ways. And I'd like to share with you a few very short stories about amazing animals. And the first one is the story of a therapy horse named Peyo. And Peyo is a 14-year-old stallion horse who lives in France. And he lives with his owner and rider, Hassan Bouchakour. And over the years, Peyo has become a therapy horse who brings comfort to hospitalized, vulnerable person, especially patients with Alzheimer or dying patients. And the most wonderful thing about Peyo is that his owner didn't teach him empathy as a way to communicate with those humans. Empathy came naturally to Peyo. The day his owner decided that Peyo was going to be a therapy horse, and Peyo is the one who actually does the whispering to humans. So he's a human whisperer, so to speak. And the second story is about the gorilla named Coco, and I'm pretty sure that all of you knows about Coco, the lowland gorilla, who was able to communicate in sign language. And Coco knew about 1,000 signs and understood about 2,000 words of spoken English. And Coco, the gorilla, learned all that from her handler, Penny Patterson, who taught her sign language. And not only was Coco capable of communicating with humans, but she expressed empathy with her sign language. She often expressed the need for love, the importance of love for all beings. And perhaps some of you know Coco's story. She was famous for her intelligence. She had an IQ around 80, 90 maybe. But to me, it wasn't her intelligence that struck me. It was that what she did with the mean of communication that she had. And the other story is about a green finch, a bird, which was called by me Diogenes. And before I had my dog, Chagall, I had a bird friend, and it was a green fish. And I called him Diogenes because he was always looking for things to eat. And once he had that, he withdrew in a corner of the house, of my house. And he was like, he was doing the same thing Diogenes did in his time. and withdrawing with his thought and with his scraps of food and having a maybe a metaphysical conversation with the world or with himself. I don't know. But I thought that the name Diogenes was proper for my green fish. Anyway, I rescued him after a storm. And he was with all his siblings, but the siblings didn't make it. And only Diogenes survived because he ate a lot. And he was always with me. He was like a Velcro green fish, if there is such a thing. And he was trying to feel whatever I felt. And the way he looked at me, the way he probed my mind, it was... And it was so unusual for a bird. And then one day I felt it was time to release him to the wild. So I went to our garden and talked to him and with all my heart and inside my head too. And I connected through love and I knew he understood me. And off he went. And it was bittersweet for me because I like that bird very much. But Diogenes must have felt the sadness in my heart because he came back shortly after that. And we spent some time again together in the garden and I renewed my goodbyes to him. And at that time, I meant it. My heart meant it. And it was only when Diogenes was sure I would be okay without him that he went for good. And these adventures, these stories about animals goes to showing that we humans talk a lot but listen very, very poorly most of the time. And sometimes animals grace us humans with the gift of their presence in our life. And they touch our hearts without using any words. Let's pause and reflect about that. Touch our hearts without using any words. And I think this is the very core of animal communication. Touching our heart without the use of any word. And because we listen and because we mute our ego, that kind of communication is possible. That kind of relationship is possible. When we mute our ego, when we truly listen, we so focus on horse whisperers, dog whisperers, dolphin whisperers, and so on and so forth. But what if we stop whisperings altogether and start listening to animals? What would that make us? Animal listeners? And that's pretty much the wrapping up of my podcast episode for today. And I hope you like it, folks. I hope you enjoy this episode and it offered you some value. If it did, you can share your comments on my website at www.inajjourney.com, or you can leave a review on Apple Podcast, and hopefully a good review, because it's the only way, the best way, not the only way, but the best way to help me as a podcaster. And for those of you who wish to support my work further, especially my new project called The Weather Outside, go to my Patreon page at www.patreon.com/infjjourney. And also make sure to download all my free INFJ freebies for you. Links will be in the show notes as usual, especially the last one I created for you, dear fellow INFJs of the world, which is called the INFJ Journey Project. Again, all the links will be in the show notes. And next week, podcast episode number 3 of season 2 will be released June 8th and will be called What Would I Say to My INFJ Younger Self. And until next week, take good care of your INFJ self. I mean it, take good care of your INFJ self. And bye for now.